This is Looking Forward, conversations about the future of work, brought to you by MillerKnoll.
Hey, everyone. Today, we're diving into the topic of technology and the workplace. Having spent much of my own career focused on the intersection of these domains, it's difficult to overstate the impact that technology has had on our corporate and home workspaces. Beginning nearly 50 years ago, desktop computing forced an entirely new approach to designing offices that was largely designed around IT networks rather than human networks. As an example, if a company hired 200 new people, they'd purchase 200 computers and monitors and then build 200 workstations around those computers and monitors where people did their work. The panels of the cubicles routed power and data to the computers, and the people, well, they were tethered to those work points in order to be productive. But that all started to change 20 years ago with the availability of mobile technologies, Wi-Fi, and stronger cellular networks. The rise of distributed work happened long before the pandemic, freeing people to work from anywhere. And today's organizations are wrestling with the relationship between technology and the workplace. At MillerKnoll, we believe that the most important technologies for most desk workers don't sit in one place. They move throughout the workday in people's pockets, purses, and backpacks, and our places of work need to help people work seamlessly throughout our spaces with these technologies. Furthermore, our buildings themselves are housing advanced technologies that workers don't necessarily directly use or even see to achieve their work, but that can help provide them improved environments that help them work in better ways. To unpack this complex but fascinating relationship between tech and the workplace, we've asked two experts with global perspectives and a lot of personal experiences in working with real estate and IT teams in addressing these issues. Aliyah Fairchild leads the Constantia Institute, which is a Brussels-based technology think tank, and Jeremy Pollock is CEO and co-founder of Calvin, a workplace experience platform, and he splits his time between Sydney and LA. I think you'll appreciate their spirited perspectives on how we can help support great technology-enabled experiences in our spaces. Enjoy this conversation with Aliyah Fairchild and Jeremy Pollock. Aliyah and Jeremy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ron.
Can you each tell us a little bit about you and what you do?
My name is Dr. Aliyah Fairchild. I am the director of the Constantia Institute, which you probably haven't heard of, but that's okay because we do a lot of work in the background for folks. I'm Brussels-based. We're a think tank. We look at the role of technology in society. I came from the world of Gartner, IDC, Forrester, and realized as the girl geek that I am, that infrastructure is also very important to how we create value and wealth and facilitate the ability for us to do work. And we'll have a whole discussion of what work actually is going forward. But we've been working in the area of the contactless economy, smarter spaces, connected infrastructures, orchestration of processes. So a lot of the work I do is for technology vendors, for employers, and for facilities managers.
Awesome. Thank you. Jeremy, how about you?
My name's Jeremy Pollack. I've been in and around the workplace tech industry for about 20 years. I co-founded our first business while I was still at university that was focused on the design and integration of audiovisual and video conferencing technologies. Over the years, that business, which is called PMT and is based in Australia, grew with our customers into the workplace tech space, focusing on real estate management, booking and scheduling, comms and media, and all the technologies which sit in between corporate real estate, people and culture, and IT functions. Fast forwarding to the pandemic, and it was through this prior experience that an opportunity presented itself for myself, along with Dan Jackson, who previously led Crestron's workplace tech product line, to start a new business called Calvin. Calvin's a software platform designed to help organizations solve their people and real estate challenges in the workplace. And by that, I mean we're focused on coordinating hybrid schedules, optimizing corporate real estate, and supporting amazing workplace experiences.
I have to admit, the two of us were talking about it last week because I was curious what he was up to.
Well, I've had the chance to talk with both of you over the years. I spent almost 12 or 13 years of my career solely focused on the integration of technology and workspace. So both of you are people that I gravitate towards. I respect your perspectives, and I love that you're bringing global perspectives to the conversation. So I kind of want to start broadly, and we can just take this as we go. But when I think about the office as we know it, or the workplace as we know it, it's really on my mind that it came to be what it is in an era of desktop technologies. I mean, there were all these years where you had to go into the office to access certain technologies. I'm old enough to remember going into the office to look for a fax machine. And today, with mobile technologies the way they are, in a sense, it set us free. I'm just curious how you think about that relationship between the workplace and technology in the modern era. I know that's super broad, but maybe, Aaliyah, you can kick us off with a few thoughts.
I was going to joke, so my clients still actually government bodies request fax, and I have to go in to find one because nobody has one anymore. What is that thing?
So. Yeah, and in healthcare. And I should acknowledge there are certain professions that are still extremely dependent on resident technologies. But for those of us that might have a laptop and a phone that can go anywhere, how do you think about it?
We are no longer device specific, but we are. I was joking the other day, I was working from home. Actually, I started to pack up to go to the office, which is one of my offices is in the center of the city. By the time I got to the fourth bag I was packing, I stopped and said, why am I going? I've got laptops set up in different portions of the home because some of them are, as I mentioned, government contracts. Some of them are locked down specific, but we are no longer a function of what we work on. And I'll give you an example. Asana, if I'm going to do project management, I know who I'm working with. I know what task I'm working on, but it never asks me where I'm doing it or what I'm doing it on. It's become irrelevant, but it isn't irrelevant. So that's the interesting bit about it, that technology is so basic these days. Anyone can walk up and do almost anything in a particular space. What is not basic and what's complex is the process. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're having a lot of friction with technology in the workplace. Is that we don't understand the processes. And this is how Jeremy and I actually met. We were discussing the fact that our airlines or our hotels know more about us than our employers do as to what we're up to.
I understand what you're saying. Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's an interesting one to kind of build on that. I think historically we didn't have access, you know, remotely to the physical technologies. And there's also a big element of security. But these days, if you think about how you can work from home or a third space, like a co-working space, an airport lounge or a cafe, organizations are moving to this zero trust network, which diminishes the need to be in the physical office. And they're kind of protecting the applications and the individual's devices, et cetera. So that really is kind of what's opening everything up. I think just one thing to be cautious of is just the fact that most knowledge workers have had the chance to refine their work from home environment to their liking. So when they come into the office and they have a worse experience, that creates a pretty severe impact and a challenge. And I think that's something that a lot of workplaces are grappling with. But on the flip side, I'd say as organizations kind of get used to people working in all these different environments, it's actually going to open up a lot of opportunities in terms of what IT services look like in traditional offices. You might find a shift to office IT as a service, the building owner or the landlord providing, you know, the core internet and the, you know, the basic services, meaning that, you know, IT can worry about more important things effectively.
Well, and through that perspective you provided, Aaliyah, it's almost like if we've got our devices and we're using platforms that are somewhat agnostic to where we are, then those physical environments, the burden's on them, isn't it, to understand those processes and make sure that the spaces provide a great experience and ideally equal to or even better than home. You know, what you're making me think of, Jeremy, it's a small thing, but the number of people that have said to me, I'm looking for dual monitors at work because that's what I landed on at home is so significant that it's almost become kind of an internal, not joke, but a cliche around here. Like, boy, if you're used to a certain workflow at home, you're probably going to be looking for it in the office too, aren't you?
It's true. We don't have that level of comfort and safety like we have in the home. Mm-hmm. You can set up dual monitors, but you can leave things out. You can remember where you put them. You don't have to put them away if you go into a meeting. You can, like I said, I've got multiple laptops spread around the house. No problem. If mm-hmm. I leave the workspace in a shared space, I can't leave my purse, my phone, my whatever. Even if there's a locker, I have to be extra cautious. So I can't have that level of ease
yeah.
for the flow. And I think that's one of the things people are not happy with, not only the commute issue, but just not having that sense of, moment, and they could sit down and do what they got to do.
I sense that too. I mean, as flexible work policies have changed demand levels in the office, it's pretty common for us to see more shared desking. The challenge, though, that you describe is right on point that when we observe, like through our ethnographic research of how people use technology, they often have these layers where the things at the back of the work surface are more static. The things that are closest to them are a little bit more active, and you can see them array their technology peripherals around them. But if you got to pack all that up and stick it in a bag or stick it in the locker, there is a certain inconvenience there, which probably means we should be quite judicious in thinking about when and how we use those shared desking environments.
This might be getting too in the weeds, but this is a huge challenge for organizations with how they design workplace, because in a sharing model, which a lot of organizations are going to, the conventional wisdom says consistency of those work points is a lot easier for people to share. But what we're talking about is personalization and context and people needing different environments. So again, to Aaliyah's point, those dual monitors, if that's what I've got at home and then I come in and the organization's gone to a single monitor, you know, maybe a curved 34-inch monitor, because technically that meets, you know, or fills the void, that might not suit Aaliyah when you come into the office.
It's a great point. And that's not too in the weeds, Jeremy. That's exactly the kind of details I think we're all wrestling with.
And if I have different kinds of work, so let's say one is deep work or deep thinking, one is flow work for conversations, I could set up those spaces still shared, but in a certain way. If I have deep work that I set up several areas with dual monitors, but not everyone's going to do everything. Task with dual monitors potentially. So I don't know if you've ever been to Tokyo Haneda Airport, but on top of the airport, they have two zones, the hot zone and the cool zone, and the different things that are going on them. One is more geared towards entertainment and liveliness and noise, and one is more shopping and eating and relaxation. You can set these places up where people can still share, but you're not going to need every resonance for every kind of activity. And this goes back to the fact my workday consists of multiple parts with multiple times of day doing different things where I don't have the same technological needs hour to hour.
Jeremy, I've been in at least a couple spaces that you had hand in creating in Sydney. And I do feel like Australia might be a little farther ahead in terms of landing on shared spaces that do feel somewhat personalized, often at a team level. Is some of the solution here trying to understand how different teams work and maybe creating enough consistency that it doesn't feel like every space is a one-off, but some knowledge of how the group might be working?
Yeah, there's no one size fits all, and it's understanding the requirements, you know, and providing a kind of a more contextual experience for individuals, but also teams. The problem, you know, is one of equality. If everybody wants the same limited resource, who gets access to it? And these are the sharing challenges. And at the same time, there's a general acceptance that we're moving towards shared workspaces if we're not using them at a previous level of frequency. That's the challenge. I don't know if anyone's got the immediate answer to it, by the way. I think it's going to be an evolution.
I have a potential one is, if you look at, again, going back to the airlines, platinum, gold, silver level of person coming into the office, depending on both your role and your frequency. If Aaliyah is going to be in the office 5 days a week and Aaliyah is customer facing and Aaliyah needs a particular kind of conference room, I might get priority. Think frequent flyer program here that I can, you know, check in at a certain desk, where if Susie only comes in 2 days a week and most of her work is administrative in the office, she might have a different level of priority. I'm not saying not all workers are created equal, but not all work is created equal or work intensive in terms of productivity.
I'm smiling, and those listening won't be able to see that, because Aaliyah knows we've been doing a lot of work within our algorithms to deal with those requirements and prioritization. We actually called it the frequent flyer algorithm initially, and it was about frequency of coming in. Then what we realized is there wasn't equality, and that people might be coming in more, but they're actually people whose job specifically required certain attributes and they weren't getting it. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a level of hierarchy, but it's not a traditional one. There's going to be some relevance to job specific requirements. And we're grappling with this with customers all the time. So, you know, that the need to have anchor points, certain users require a specific desk or attributes. And one of our clients turned around and the executive said, well, we don't really want to do assigned desks. What we want to do is make sure we have enough desks with the attributes that our people need to fulfill their roles, which I thought was a really nice way to put it.
There are some companies I work with, when you enter, there is a center of excellence in the front of house. So where you would meet a customer, I'm assuming Herman Miller chairs there behind you, Ryan, that you'll have these sorts of things as well. And then the people who service those spaces sit nearby there. So location has to do with being customer facing. And I go back to my introduction of who I am. A lot of my clients are either technology vendors or actual organizations, not necessarily the HR folks, but they're looking at where they're going to spend their money on tech. And there's an outcome involved. And that outcome is not necessarily productivity oriented, but process oriented. So where the money needs to be put to expedite the process to be profitable.
Well, Jeremy, I want to go back for just for a second. I think the idea of using a technology platform like yours that's helping the people who use a space not just find a space, but find the amenities, the accoutrements, the technology they need is a really important shift. Because if back in the day it was, let's make sure we got a room for eight, it might be that I need a space that either has the technology or can support the technology I need. One that comes to my mind is our research team uses digital whiteboards like Miro and Mural all the time. I know that when we're going to use a tool like that together, we want a big screen, like much bigger display than what you'd normally put somebody's face on. And so something as simple as I'm looking for that amenity is a really, really helpful convenience that technology can then facilitate.
Definitely. And I think you're seeing that come into a number of products and just generally booking and calendar systems. I am doing a certain type of work that needs a certain technology or attribute. And I talk often about the user experience and kind of what employees are seeking and how technology can help. And I talk about a frictionless and contextual experience in a consumer sense. You know, Netflix knows what I want to watch tonight and Spotify curates my playlist. And then I come to work and my organization doesn't really know that much about me or, you know, when I'm coming in and who I need to work with and my skills, interests, preferences, etc. So I think that there needs to be a change in workplace to provide more of that contextual experiences and for organizations to know more about their people.
The only danger with this, Jeremy, is if I ask you all this information and then I don't use it, the expectation is even set higher that, well, I gave you a lot of information about me. Why don't you know better? Whereas we're expecting the airline or the hotel or whatever to remember our preferences, what aisle seat we want to sit in, they were allergic to peanuts or what have you. But if they don't use the information provided, you actually end up having a bit of a worse experience because expectation is set. So I'm curious if you think the organizations have the maturity to bundle that information in.
I think in short, not at this stage. We talked earlier about grappling with the fact that I've got a better setup at home than I do in the office. If I'm going to come into the office, I'm expecting to have a better tech experience than I've got at home, or access to something which I don't have anywhere else. That's the opportunity.
I'm smiling because I never get that, and I have no expectation in that regard. I work in three different locations, and I don't expect anything other than a power plug and occasionally access to a kettle. That's about all I'm getting these days.
I think we can do better than that. I'm optimistic. One thing that I'd kind of like to pick up on, just having worked with a lot of facilities and real estate folks in the past, there has been a lot of terminology around workplace tech, prop tech, as in property techs, smart buildings, et cetera. And this might be an overgeneralization, but I think it's easy to say, well, I'm hoping IT thinks about that. But let's just maybe unpack for a second this increased emphasis that I've sensed in recent years on smarter buildings. What does all that mean to you? And tell us a little bit about how this kind of category of technology is growing. Jeremy, since you live in the midst of it, you can start us off. But Aaliyah, I know you've paid a lot of attention to this too.
I think these are broad terms. Prop tech in general, to me, it's applied to anything that involves real estate. Smart building, and I'm going to talk specifically about a commercial property or, you know, and ideally even workplace. My mind goes to how we connect and harness the systems within our building. So things like access control, lighting, HVAC. It would involve hardware and software integrations, analytics, and really the term workflow automation, because we want to achieve outcomes. So it could be environmental efficiency. It could be streamlining user experience, optimizing maintenance. This is typically smart building for me. But I think what we should be talking about really today is how does this translate into more of a smart workspace context? The smart buildings is a topic which has been around for a long time, applies to lots of industries, but smart workplace, I think, is the real opportunity. It's not getting anywhere near enough focus.
Actually, I was just joking with myself before this. I get so many invitations now to different webinars and conferences, and there was one that caught my eye this morning about inviting me for dynamic space management discussions. And I thought, okay, because For me, a smart building, again, I have to draw on my economics background, is data for decision making. I have to collect the right data, and I have to be able to utilize it to appropriately give resources to certain assets, whether it be people or objects, sensors, computers, networks, energy priorities, cooling, lighting, heating. Where am I going to spend my efforts? Having experienced last week traveling from Poland to Germany, one of the issues we have right now is a resource constraint called humans. And even the most automation in the world right now, if you don't have enough humans to run it, you have backlogs. So allocation of manpower as well as data resources to optimize the use of the asset. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm seeing right now is the puzzling piece. They're collecting lots of data, but what do you do with it?
Yeah. Well, I've seen that emphasis too, like the use of smarter technologies to be more energy efficient, to reduce maybe custodial costs, et cetera. It makes a ton of sense on that operational efficiencies. That kind of provocative term you threw out there, Jeremy, around smarter workplace, to me says it needs to get to the experiences the people have when they come in the door and maybe a little bit more focused on end user experiences. Not that the building efficiency side isn't critically important, but getting it to the user is certainly, it feels super timely and pretty urgent.
Yeah. So just some examples, right? When we come into a building and then we have a different experience in the building than we have within our tenancy, or when we go between different buildings that a single organization has, but there's different landlords, and all of a sudden we've got different passes and we have to register and things don't work, or there's a building experience app and then it's different from the tenant app, and all of a sudden it just gets too hard and it's confusing. And this, it shouldn't be this way if we're having a smart workplace experience.
For me, technology is a connector between people and place. It's not the connection, it's a connector. So, you know, there's more to it than just the tech. But the tech allows us to plug the two together. But again, the orchestration has to be there, the removal of friction, that I don't notice the tech. You know, I can look at my phone and I can book a parking space and get my visitor ID code and figure out, I had to the hospital this morning, what route I have to follow to where I'm supposed to be going, and I'm enabled versus disabled.
I think that's a provocative and aspirational statement, because generally I think there's a mindset that technology has freed us from space. And we talked a little bit last season on this podcast about the metaverse and maybe put to bed the notion that we would all simply just be working purely as avatars someday, because we are physical beings that are in physical spaces that are either supporting us or not. But the notion that the technology is there to help bridge people with the space, and the examples you use, I think, are really good. I also think about simple things like knowing what's going on in the cafeteria. Is there a long queue? Is there a yoga class later? Simple things like that, I think, is a wonderful way of framing it. How can the technology help people to connect better with the spaces that they're in?
I'm a big fan of digital signage. I ignore most corporate emails that go past. I apologize to anyone listening who knows me in the corporate space, but where is that? I don't know, but I'm walking by and all of a sudden I see, oh, there's a food event at lunch. Oh, that's nice. I'm here. I'll go. Or I didn't know so-and-so got promoted, or I'd see things that would not occur to me otherwise because I am physically in front of the digital signage. There's a lot of ways to connect me to make me recognize I am where I am. And going back to the hotel and the airlines, if you're on the plane, you see the logo of the airline everywhere reminding you who you're flying with, for better or for worse. In the workspace, the colors, the use of lighting, and even in certain hotels, the scent of the hotel, you know where you are. It's a recognition factor.
Jeremy, other sorts of end user experiences you think technology can help support to bridge people with the spaces they're in?
I think it just goes back to that contextual experience. So some of the things that Leah mentioned are great once you're already in the workplace, but how do you know about them prior to coming in? How can they be used as an incentive to, you know, to bring people in? And I often say coming in together at the right time for the right purpose with the right people. You know, again, how an organization should know that Leah is interested in yoga and has a favorite meal, and if that's on in the cafeteria, how do we know those things about our people and then curate those events and experiences and optimize when to put them on, for example, not at a time where half of the people with that interest are on PTO, for example, All this information exists, but it exists in silos, and we've got to do a better job of connecting that and making it frictionless.
Like a service platform as an integrator of it. I take these different pieces together and make a picture.
And I really like that idea of the technology helping people to do what they primarily want to do when they come in, which is connect with each other. I know we've had schedules on our emails, et cetera, that allow us to book times with each other. But thinking about technology platforms related to that smart workplace experience that help you connect with other people, even more so than connect with the space, I think offers a lot of promise for the future.
I've been seeing some good examples recently in terms of Google Calendar and Robin, different ways that you can try to manipulate information to see not only where am I going, but what's going to be there when I get there, try to incentivize me to come in.
Well, I think even something as simple as, and I know Google supported this a while back, being able to respond that you're attending in person or virtual is such a simple thing, but I think it changes people's behaviors because I often hear, well, I came into the office this day, but I was kind of hoping to connect with so-and-so. And as it turns out, she wasn't there or they weren't there. And I think that predictability that the people that you might want to see might be there is a really helpful resource too.
And also depending on where you work, for example, I'm in the heart of Brussels. There's yet another strike or another union demonstration at 12 o'clock. You might want to move the meeting to 3 that you could actually get into the parking lot. These sorts of tying local events to the scheduling as well, knowing there's going to be a train strike that day or something may deter you in terms of your planning.
Yeah.
I would love to see AI built in terms of predictability, that the AI can help me with my schedule. I want to see Sarah. I want to sit there. I want to have lunch there. What's the best day to optimize my week? What's the best day for me to be there?
And I think we're headed there. Ryan just raised a good point, though. The accuracy of people's plans is the hard part. Organizations are providing the flexibility and the choice, but I think we're missing the transparency of what we intend to do and the accuracy of that. And it creates a huge impact on our coworkers and on the organization and its real estate and the services which we provide. You know, some organizations who are kind enough to provide, you know, great food and beverage programs are really struggling because they cannot work out when it's required and they're overproviding a lot of the time.
Well, can we shift for a second to some of the audiences that we all serve? I think we've been saying as an industry for decades now that facilities and real estate, along with IT and HR, represent a trifecta of sorts. But when it comes to really thinking about technology user experiences, what have you seen that works for organizations? Is it something that needs to be owned by IT? Does some sort of consortium between different groups make sense? Like, what's the best way to approach this for our listeners who might say, boy, we need to think about better technologies to support better experiences?
I hesitate. I've seen some good examples, but they're not traditional good examples. So I'm looking from an employer-centric point of view, because employees want everything, obviously, and they're not paying for any of it. So that's a different element. It depends if there's a product champion in the organization that can tie those different functions together and give good direction as to where they want to go. Mm-hmm. I can also talk about some really bad examples. Well, but the time my husband had to have someone wait for him at the UN to keep turning the light on in the men's room because it was the weekend and it kept going off. These sorts of, you know, when you put people in the space to be productive. But I think facilities management actually in the 21st century has stepped up and has taken a stronger role as to not only the asset itself, but its relationship with the business operations.
I was going to say mandate, but I know that's a dirty word in 2023. So
wrong suggestion.
I'll say sponsorship, which is, I think, what Aaliyah was talking about. Like, someone's got to drive this. And I've, as a service provider, I've seen all the things that can go wrong, you know, the technical roadblocks instead of solutions, trying to leverage existing systems, you know, when they're not fit for purpose, or, you know, even worse, organizations trying to build their own in-house platforms, you know, when it's not appropriate, leaving technology to solve the problem when, as we said earlier, it's really only one part of it, it's the tool. But I think I'm seeing companies streamline reporting lines. Often, you know, real estate, P&C, and IT are starting to come together and port into the same executives. I think that makes a big difference. On the IT side, some of the more progressive organizations, I'm thinking some of the larger tech firms, are splitting IT into the business systems, incorporating workplace tech, CRE experience, the things we're talking about today, versus the customer or the client facing tech and product. That feels like a really good delineation, because otherwise often IT is prioritizing the customer and the product. So I think an internal focus onto internal business systems is a really healthy one.
And you get the direction in terms of the core competency of the business where HR comes in, employee retention and recruitment. What's the minimum you have to get certain segments of the market as employees? And I'm not talking about just generational, but different kinds of workers expect different resources.
Well, let me get more specific and push on this just a little bit. Let's just say that one of our listeners is in facilities management. And I agree, by the way, Aaliyah, the International Facilities Management Association, IFMA, as well as many facility managers I know, have really stepped up recently in terms of thinking about tech, cybersecurity, et cetera. But let's say someone's a facility manager, they really want to think about a smarter workplace tool. Maybe it's visitor management, maybe it's scheduling. They're looking at a platform like Calvin or others. Did they embark upon this themselves? Do they start reaching out to somebody in IT with some sort of job title? Like, what's the best way to begin to assess some of these new technologies and how they may or may not work both for the employee, but for the organization? Any thoughts on practical approaches?
I'm going to speak a little out of turn here, but one of the hottest areas in market research and technology right now is looking at the use case of other companies, looking at how they make their decisions so you can learn from other people, which is not necessarily a user group, but looking at your peers or the people who you believe are moving the needle to see how they did the implementation. I think people are slightly more transparent than they used to be. They don't give you the data, the numbers, how much it costs them, but they do give you some of the thought processes as to what they were considering when they were making their shortlists. I don't know. Jeremy, would you agree from what you do?
Yeah, I do. And even, you know, looking externally is one thing, but even internally, looking to the outcomes or looking to the flexibility which you think the organization may require. You know, workplaces, it's really fluid at the moment. So I find the old days of putting together a spreadsheet with 501 requirements, which every vendor can respond to and say, yes, we do that, is not really going to get you the best outcome. Thinking about those use cases, the personas, the journeys, and the employee outcome, and then also for the organization, the ROI and the flexibility feels like a much more progressive way to go about things.
Excellent. Let's talk a little bit more about some of those organizational outcomes. I know, Aaliyah, this is something that you talk with your clients about. If we get back to that idea of smarter building technologies, prop tech, et cetera, are there organizational goals beyond the user experiences? Let's just agree that positive user experiences are really important, that are most pressing or driving the adoption of new technology platforms these days?
Two come to mind, and I'm going to say ESG more from the E than the S, unfortunately. Still, we still haven't gotten that S part yet, but they want to show that they are trying to be more appropriate corporate citizens when it comes to their role in the environment, their use of energy, their carbon footprint, their recycling, et cetera. So they're able to put some goals there in terms of savings. Mm-hmm. But also they're looking at inclusivity. And I think, Ryan, you know, I also teach graduate school. One of my students just finished her work in neurodiversity in the workspace, that they having these technologies in place supports a wider employee audience. So being a more inclusive workspace, because the different kinds of work that can be done can be facilitated by using technologies and having certain environments available.
That's interesting. Are there specifics? Not that I want you to necessarily take from your grad student, but are there specific technologies that you can kind of draw a line back towards being more inclusive, or is it broader just in terms of supporting greater range of experiences?
I'm going to leave with the broader portion. There are some things in terms of acoustics, lighting, level, again, going the whole level of comfort. Some people just have a hard time working with other people around them. Even if the other person is not doing anything, they actually are more comfortable working in, I'm going to call it a safe space, that you can create these with artificial barriers. They don't have, it's not an open plan office. There are things around them to make them feel more relaxed. There are design tools you can put into play combined with technology to make this happen. But I think a lot of organizations, and this is when they give the instruction for someone in designing for neurodiversity, they don't know what instruction to even give or how to measure. And that was one of the problems she's been having with her thesis is how do you show progress here? How many more neurodiverse individuals you've hired because of the technology? Well, how are you defining that? And that gets a little bit personal as well. People don't necessarily want to identify that way, but they do appreciate the resources in place. So it's this weird retention thing going on.
Yeah, but definitely a good example of getting after that S in social, not just the environmental side. But as you're illustrating, these technologies do produce data. Sometimes it's difficult to know what to do with the data, particularly if you have a lot of dashboards. But if it has to do with reporting, reporting against specific goals, then I can see why there would be increased adoption.
And the challenge is, I was just having a discussion with a mutual friend of ours, we'll explain later, who we are looking at carbon footprints and measurement. And she was looking for specific tools, mobile tools, for being able to assess this. And every country seems to have a different approach. You're comparing Down Under to the UK, to other tools out there that you could do a calculation, but there's no consistency in standards. You have to report this, especially if you're public, but in what means, using what kind of calculation?
Makes sense. Well, let me ask you this. If you were to sit down with a friend or a colleague who was head of corporate real estate at a large organization who said to you, wow, what should we be thinking about as far as improved technology experiences? I know we've already talked about a lot, but where would you set those priorities? What kind of coaching would you give?
I think firstly, work with the P&C function, just understand how they ideally want our people to work, the team structures, the spatial requirements, et cetera. And I think that's where you kick things off. Then I'd say, you know, looking for that platform or the way to manage when, how, where, and why our people need to use the space. And that could be our space. It could also be external space as well. I think everyone understands that third spaces are going to come into play here. And we do that so we can forecast and optimize how much space we're using and how much we require. That's the data part that Aaliyah mentioned earlier. But also the makeup of that space and the services and the amenities, the perks that we provide, I would probably be considering some more effective form of block and stack than traditional neighborhood planning as well. It just feels inefficient these days. And I think we need to reconsider the need for traditional space planning and tools. They're not dynamic and keeping up with the way that people are working. And then, you know, when people actually come into the office, focus on seamless collaboration, but also like that more functional experience or more powerful experience in the office than when we're remote. I talked with a tech client today about how they're going to run their town halls. And the view that it's going to, this notion of being like the studio audience, when you get to come into the show and watch it be recorded, it's a real privilege. Everyone who's remote can still partake, but it's not the same as being in that studio audience. And this client was talking about how we share that around. So during the year, everyone gets the opportunity to be in person with the executives, presenting, asking Q&A in the room, throwing the microphone around, so to speak. And then that frictionless or contextual experience and convenience in the office. So one of our clients has this concept of booths on the run. So it's, how can I see which quiet rooms or phone booths, et cetera, are available right now? These are, you know, resources that aren't bookable and people are running around the office looking to find one. Surely there's a better way and we can use technology and sensors for that. Or even meeting rooms, you know, at 1 minute before or after the hour, you see people crunched over a laptop trying to find the free meeting rooms and running around the office again. Like, we can solve those problems. And then probably the last two, maybe intentional togetherness. I think like the team charters and agreements coming in on the same day together, on sites and off sites, you're seeing a lot more discussion around this. How can technology help coordinate it? What types of spaces are required? How does that align to employee satisfaction and to productivity? You know, how are the teams performing? Is it better if they come in together on prearranged days? And then lastly, we talked about the data, and I'm not just saying badge data because that's generic and not everyone badges in the first place anyway, but planned versus actual attendance. Are people coming in when they say they're coming in? What does that mean for their teammates, but also efficiency for the organization? Team requirements, you know, looking at the cohorts, what type of spaces, services, amenities do those team needs? And then lastly, engagement with events and amenities and the like. Who's using what and how do you correlate that back to the business and objectives?
I'm going to flip that last point around. I would like to see a different visit. We count what has happened. Occupancy analysis. We've looked at, it's a supply mentality. How did they consume what we supplied? I'm a marketer at heart. Let's create demand. Let's make workplace as a destination. We can push the information out there. We can, almost like an influencer, show people at live events from the company and make it enticing to come in. There has to be a reason to come into the office. Part of it is the need to collaborate, but part of it is to be relevant and recognized and there. And part of being there is an experience. If you come in the office and there's nobody there, why did I come? So there has to be almost like a travel destination, some itinerary, some reason to be there that you walk, you say, gosh, I'm glad I came in today. Even if it's goat yoga or, you know, whatever it is, maybe it's corny, but people actually, I'm working with a younger cohort right now. They want to be coached and mentored. They want to be around other people. They want a reason to come in. At the moment they come in, they plug in, they don't talk to each other. They probably text, but okay, they don't. There's no phones ringing. There's no communication. You can be doing that from your bedroom or you could be doing that from there. It doesn't matter. Have a reason for it to matter. So create demand. Don't just count what has happened, but try to estimate what you can get to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Move the needle.
I love that neither of you started with focus on these categories of technologies, do this analysis. It is so, historically, it's been so common to want to start with the tech. But Jeremy, to your point, starting with those work activities, those desirable experiences, those little frictions in the workday and seeing how to solve them. And then Aaliyah, I think that's an awesome idea, using the tech to give a glimpse into all the things that you hope to achieve while there. It's almost like we need a new influencer Instagram strategy of all the awesome things happening in the workplace, right?
One of the offices I'm working in has a new video studio upstairs. Everyone who sees this then wants to come in because then they can create their podcast webinars on the side of this bookable space. It's going to be a better quality than what they've got at home. Their green screen's a bit tatty after a couple of years of use here. And there are going to be reasons to come in beyond that. One of my clients, their colleagues only come in around the lunch hour because there's better places to do lunch there. And then they all go home. But then you take videos and post them on the company's, you know, socials of people having lunch together. Make people want to come in, create demand.
Give them a glimpse into the things that they are seeking that the workplace can better support. I think this is a wonderful philosophical shift from there's a technology in the space that you need, so you need to come here, to let's take a look at how the technology can facilitate the experiences that you're so often seeking, in particular with others. Awesome. Well, I'm super appreciative for both of you. Any last thoughts or words of advice for our listeners on conquering the big topic of technology in the workplace?
Just that it's an evolution. I think we're in the midst of an industrial revolution in workplace, and it's going to take time to play out, and technology is going to evolve. I think, you know, if you look at the equitable conferencing or collaboration experience, it was 3 years ago now that the big vendors, Microsoft, Zoom, Cisco, et cetera, were talking about how it was going to be an equitable experience. It's only just coming to fruition. So you need to bear with this and let the technology evolve, but also just don't expect technology to solve all the problems. It's a tool, and it's really just one part of the strategy and the environment and the change management and all the things that we know are required to make everything succeed.
As a boomer, fundamentally, when I was growing up, productivity happened in the workplace and consumption happened at home. And now we've blended both. Consumption and productivity happen in both locations. And when you actually come in to do a work process, that needs to be a streamlined flow. Technology, as I mentioned, it's a connector, but it's not the connection. It's part of the picture. I think it's important for organizations to understand what work is now and how work, quote unquote, is not just about productivity and how that can be enabled and where technology plays a role.
Practical words of wisdom from two of the best tech thinkers I know. Thank you both for spending time with us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ryan.